Welcome to Planning Law with Chickens, the occasional planning law podcast brought to you by Town Legal. I'm Meeta Kaur, partner at Town Legal. Today's episode is the next in our series of planning case law summaries. We're going to cover the case of Michael Armstrong and the Secretary of State, which was handed down last month in the High Court. A really useful case on the scope of Section 73, I think. The successful claimant in that case represented himself, so I'm going to hand over straight away to the excellent Ruchi Parekh of Cornerstone Barristers, who appeared on behalf of the defendant, the Secretary of State, for Levelling Up Housing and Communities. Over to you, Ruchi.
Hello, this is Ruchi Parekh from Cornerstone Barristers, and I'm here to discuss the recent Armstrong decision. Armstrong was concerned with the scope of Section 73 of the Town and Country Planning Act, which is the route to develop land without compliance with previously attached conditions. The scope of Section 73 has been the subject of many decisions in recent years, most well known of which is, of course, Finney. In Finney, as listeners will know, the Court of Appeal held that Section 73 could not be used if the variation in conditions would result in a conflict with the description of development. Now, Armstrong was a case in which there was no such conflict. Instead, the issue here was whether there was any further restriction on the use of Section 73 in these types of cases. The Secretary of State's position was that Section 73 could not be used in cases involving a fundamental variation of the permission, even where there was no conflict with the description of development. I acted for the Department of Levelling Up in this case, and just to be clear, the views I express on this podcast are my personal views. Now, before I get to the decision and its implications, I just want to touch on the facts. They are quite simple. Mr. Armstrong had permission to construct one dwelling. At the time of the grant, there were no conditions related to plans or drawings submitted with the application. Several years later, Mr. Armstrong made a Section 96A application for a non-material amendment. This added a condition requiring the development to be carried out in accordance with drawings that had been submitted with the original application. Then a couple of months later, Mr. Armstrong made a Section 73 application to substitute the drawings. While the original plans had shown an irregular modernist design, the new plans proposed an Alpine Lodge-style dwelling. Both the local planning authority and inspector found that the proposal would amount to a complete alteration from the originally permitted dwelling and therefore fell outside the scope of Section 73. In reaching that conclusion, they relied on long-standing advice in the planning practice guidance, which stated that one of the uses of a Section 73 app is to seek a minor material amendment. This is not, of course, defined in the statute, but it was defined in the PPG as likely to include those amendments where the scale and or nature results in a development which is not substantially different from that which has been approved. Mr. Armstrong challenged the inspector's conclusions and his reliance on the PPG. The Secretary of State defended the decision, but conceded that the guidance on minor material amendments was not in keeping with the statutory provision. The focus of the appeal was therefore not on the PPG, but on the more focused question of fundamental alterations or variations. So what did the court decide? Well, Mr. James Strawn KC, sitting as a Deputy Judge of the High Court, decided that the PPG was wrong and misleading. But as I said, that was not an issue in the case and was not being defended. As for what was argued in the case, the judge reached two conclusions. One, that Section 73 is not restricted to amendments that are non-fundamental. And two, that if he was wrong on that legal question, and if there is an implicit qualification to Section 73 preventing fundamental variations, then in any event, he did not think that the inspector properly directed himself to that question. And at least part of the problem here was the inspector's reliance on the PPG concept of minor material amendment. So what does this all mean and where does this leave us? I think there are five practical implications that arise from this decision that are worth considering. First, the debate around this minor material amendment test has finally been put to bed. Developers and local planning authorities have for many years battled over what is or isn't permissible by way of Section 73. Many authorities routinely relied on the PPG to refuse to entertain those applications which were seen as involving more than a minor or substantial alteration to the conditions. So developers will be pleased to hear that this formulation can no longer be relied upon. This is no doubt a welcome clarification for those seeking to use the Section 73 route in a practical way to achieve changes to conditions. Second, the judge appears to be saying that as long as there is no conflict with the description of development, Section 73 can be used to achieve fundamental variations to the original permission. Now, this is potentially a departure from previous well-established judicial authority. The judge deals with this point at paragraph 80 of the judgment. He says, and I quote, "I do not consider that any of the case law materially supports the defendant's attempt to restricting the scope of Section 73 to minor material amendments or non-fundamental variations where there is no conflict with the operative part of the permission." A lot of commentary around Armstrong has focused on that PPG advice being declared as wrong. But in doing so, I think some have missed what is perhaps the more controversial aspect of the ruling, which is to do with the fundamental variation point. In Armstrong, the judge seems to be sweeping away the so-called Arrowcroft principle. Arrowcroft was the case where Mr. Justice Sullivan held that a counsel is only able to impose different conditions on a Section 73 app, which could have lawfully been imposed upon the original permission, in the sense that they do not amount to a fundamental alteration of the proposal put forward. So the judge in this case looked at Arrowcroft and said that because Arrowcroft actually involved that Finney-type conflict, that was the context in which Mr. Justice Sullivan had referred to a fundamental variation test. It was not a broader principle about Section 73 applications where there was no conflict with the description of development, like in this case. So an upshot of the ruling is that developers can now rely on Section 73 to achieve fundamental variations of the original permission, as long as there is no Finney conflict, and subject, of course, to conditions meeting the usual Newbury test. My own view on this is that it might be an arguably risky approach. This is because, given the ruling in Arrowcroft, there might still be appetite for further challenge over whether Armstrong correctly interpreted Arrowcroft. And given this potential for legal argument, if developers are seeking to achieve a fundamental alteration, they may well consider it safer to go down the Section 70 route. That brings me then to my third point, and that is, while Armstrong clearly favours an expansive view of Section 73, it does not mean that this will necessarily lead to a great increase in successful applications. This is because it is still open to decision makers to refuse proposals on their planning merits. This was identified by the judge as one of the reasons why, in his view, it would not make sense to restrict the scope of Section 73, because decision makers could assess the acceptability of such fundamental changes and determine if they should be approved in the ordinary way. In practice, my experience is that the types of cases in which local planning authorities refuse to entertain applications were often those cases in which they plainly considered the proposals were not acceptable. So it may be that following Armstrong, even though these applications will now be considered, they may still be refused on traditional planning grounds. My fourth point then is that, assuming Finney is truly the only restriction on the scope of Section 73, developers will want to ensure that the description of development is sufficiently broad to allow a range of amendments at a later stage so as not to be caught out by Finney. Now, one point worth flagging here is that the Levelling Up and Regeneration Bill is set to introduce a new Section 73B. This will deal with applications for planning permissions substantially the same as the existing permission. This will work around the Finney restriction, but clearly it would not extend to schemes that are of a substantially or fundamentally different nature. Then my fifth and final point is that the legal debate around Section 73 is far from over, and the arguments are just going to shift to different territory, in my view. A number of cases post-Finney have sought to test the limits of the Finney principle. So in 2021, we had the Parkview decision where the judge found a Finney conflict, that was where the court sought to construe what the grant of planning permission was all about. And in doing so, had to look at the original conditions to interpret the permission. And in that case, even though the Section 73 Act did not seek to amend the operative words like Finney, the judge concluded that it ended up having the same overall effect and was therefore found to be outside the scope of Section 73. We then had Reed at the end of last year, where the focus was on removing a condition which had previously served to restrict the grant of permission to holiday accommodation and had prevented further changes of use within C3 of the use classes order. In that case, the High Court confirmed that the removal of that condition was not a breach of the Finney principle. And then currently, there is the case of Fisk in the High Court, in which we are awaiting judgment. That focuses on whether reducing the scope of a permitted scheme amounts to Finney conflict. This is in the context of a grant of permission for a solar park, including, among other things, a substation, and a condition which would prohibit development otherwise than in accordance with plans that do not show a substation. So that's a decision that we're still waiting on. But taking a step back, it seems that while Finney may have tried to end the debate on the scope of Section 73, if anything, we are continuing to see a steady number of High Court challenges all concerned with this provision. Now, that does beg the question as to whether Finney was correctly decided. But luckily, that goes well beyond the scope of my brief for today. So that's all from me, and thank you very much for listening.